Hello and welcome to The Late Debate with me, Audrey Carvel. On the programme tonight, mortgage relief or a banker's charter? The government's plan to help those who can't pay their home loans. Will there be an avalanche of repossessions or will it root out those who can pay but won't? And white smoke in Rome. Step forward, Pope Francis from Argentina. All coming up on The Late Debate after the news, read now by Fintan Duffy.
A very good evening from the newsroom. Cardinals in Rome have elected the Jesuit Jorge Bergoglio from Argentina as the new pope. The 76-year-old will be known as Pope Francis. Addressing the crowds in St. Peter's Square, he said the world should set off on a path of love and fraternity, and he asked the faithful to pray for him. Reacting to the news, the Archbishop of Dublin, Dr. Diarmaid Martin, said Pope Francis is a simple man who is dedicated to the poor.
His entire ministry is very much linked with the poor. He moved out of his residence, of the residence of the Archbishop. He's known for travelling on the buses and the underground in Buenos Aires. He was in a controversy recently with some priests who wouldn't baptise the children of unmarried mothers. His simplicity there this evening, no gestures, almost a man who was himself shell-shocked and embarrassed by what was happening.
In a message to the new Pope this evening, President Michael D. Higgins said the election would bring great joy to the people of Argentina as well as to the Jesuit community across the world. Meanwhile, offering his congratulations, Taoiseach Enda Kenny said Pope Francis had the best wishes of all Irish people of all traditions. Elsewhere, the government and the central bank have unveiled a plan to tackle the growing mortgage arrears crisis. Provision is being made in the plan for debt write-downs in certain cases, and banks now face demanding new targets to agree solutions for borrowers in distress. But the central bank deputy governor, Matthew Elderfield, said he expected repossessions to rise.
It's an unpalatable fact, in light of the severity of the crisis, that repossessions must be expected to rise significantly. This will only be in the bank's economic interest as a last resort. And indeed, repossession of the principal dwelling home for cooperating borrowers is only permitted as a last resort.
There was one winner of tonight's lotto jackpot worth just over €3 million. The numbers drawn were 2, 11, 14, 25, 30 and 34. The bonus number was 27. The winning ticket was purchased in the southeast of the country. The weather forecast becoming mostly dry and clear tonight, but very cold and frosty. Lowest temperatures of 0 to minus 4 degrees. That's it for now. We'll have news again at 11.
Fintan, thank you very much indeed. You're very welcome back to The Late Debate with me, Audrey Carvel. In a few minutes, we'll be debating today's announcement by the government to deal with the mortgage arrears crisis. Until 11 o'clock, we'll be discussing if it will amount to relief for the thousands who can't afford to repay their loans, or if it's a banker's charter. Does it give all the power to the banks? Will it result in a wave of repossessions, or will it root out those who can pay but won't? And joining me to discuss the plan are Caroline Lennon-Nally, who has been in mortgage arrears for almost 2.5 years, David Hall, Director of the Irish Mortgage Holders Organisation, Fine Gael TD for Dublin Central, Pascal Donoghue, and Brendan Burgess, founder of the financial advice website askaboutmoney.com and a member of the previous government's expert group on mortgage arrears. We'll be coming to you in a few minutes. But first tonight, to the white smoke from Rome 3.5 hours ago.
Annuncio vobis gaudium magnum. Habemus Papam. Eminentissimum ac reverendissimum Dominum, Dominum Georgium Marium, Sancte Romane Ecclesiae Cardinalem Bergoglio, qui sibi nomen imposuit Franciscum.
Bishop and his people, let us begin our journey as the new Church of Rome with its bishop. It will be a journey, a pilgrimage of fraternity and of love.
That's the new pope to the world's 1 billion or so Catholics, Jorge Mario Bergoglio from Argentina. He's 76 and he's the first leader of the church ever chosen from South America. He will be known as Pope Francis. He has a reputation for personal simplicity, Choosing to live in a small apartment rather than an archbishop's palace, he gave up his chauffeured limousine in favour of taking the bus to work, and apparently he even cooked his own meals. He's a member of the Jesuit order, and I'm joined now on the line by Dublin-based priest and social justice campaigner Peter McVerry, who is also a Jesuit priest. Peter, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thank you very much indeed.
What was your reaction when you heard the announcement?
Well, my initial reaction, I didn't know anything about this man, to be honest. But I did make some inquiries and I began to feel very hopeful. He has a strong commitment to social justice. He has spoken out very strongly against injustice and against corruption in Argentina. And he has a strong siding with the poor. And I think that is the critical issue for the church in our world today, that unless the church discovers, rediscovers the centrality of social justice in at the heart of the gospel, then I think the church will simply continue to wither away. So I would be very hopeful, I must say. He's also a man, as you said, as was said earlier, of great simplicity, takes the bus to work, nothing ostentatious about him, and if there's anything about the Vatican that was repelling in the past, it was the ostentatiousness of the whole Vatican pomp and ceremony and that. So my initial reaction is very, very hopeful this could be a new direction for the church.
And presumably you hope that he will change the Vatican rather than the Vatican changing him.
Well, absolutely. There is a very, very strong curia in the Vatican, and to a large extent, they just want to continue as things have been. And unless he takes them on, and that's going to be a difficult task, but unless he takes them on, nothing's going to change.
So many challenges facing the church, Peter, not least, of course, the sex abuse crisis, which has dogged the church for many, many years now. What will he have to do in relation to that specifically?
I think he has to make it very clear to the universal church and to every bishop in every diocese that these issues have got to be dealt with openly, transparently, and in cooperation with the civil authorities. And I think he has to make that absolutely very clear. There can be no further cover-ups. There can be no further sidelining of the issue. Where it becomes apparent that this has happened, it has to be dealt with very, very clearly and very, very forcefully.
You think he'll be strong enough to tackle that problem and the other problems with governance and all the other challenges facing Catholicism at the moment?
Well, I hope he would be. He comes with a very, very good CV. He's a man, clearly, who has been involved. He's a very pastorally minded man. He's a very approachable man. But he comes also with a long history of working in the area of spirituality, a spiritual director. He was also provincial of the province out there, and that was a difficult job, a difficult governance job, being provincial of a South American province. So I would be, again, I'm very, very hopeful that he will have the qualities and the strength and the grace to deal with the issues that serious issues that confront the church today.
And by electing him, is the church sending a message that its future lies in the global south, which is home to the bulk of the world's Catholics?
Well, I'm not sure what the reasoning behind electing him is. We probably never know, but clearly a very, very large percentage of the world's Catholics live in Latin America. And I think it is only right that they should be represented in this way as Pope. They've never had a Pope from Latin America before. I think it's only right that they should have one now at this stage where they are so numerous.
You're critical, aren't you, of the whole process that we've been seeing over the last number of days. You make the point that you're working with young people, trying to get them interested in religion, and this pomp is on parade in Rome.
Yeah, it's very off-putting. It's off-putting to me, never mind to young people. I mean, you have cardinals dressed in ridiculous clothes that were probably fashionable in the 14th century. And it's like something out of a theatre. And you're asking young people to commit themselves and to commit their lives to a church where this is the very visible front of the church. It's worse than that. I mean, you're asking young people to commit themselves to a male-dominated, authoritarian church which stifles dissent without recognizing the human rights or the goodwill of those who disagree with them, and to try to control even the topics that might be discussed. I just feel that, you know, the Gospels for me are an extraordinarily rich source of inspiration. I think the Gospels have the true values which our world needs today, but try and bring young people to see the value of the Gospels. You have to get through this facade that the Vatican puts up, and it's an almost impossible task. I would say today in the Western world, the biggest obstacle to bringing young people to faith in God and in Jesus Christ is the institutional church.
Peter, very good to talk to you tonight. Thank you very much indeed. That's Dublin-based priest Father Peter McVerry, social justice campaigner, of course, too, and a member of the Jesuit order, as is the new Pope, Pope Francis. It's 11 minutes now past 10. You're listening to The Late Debate. For the rest of the programme, we're going to be debating today's announcement by the government to deal with the mortgage arrears crisis. And a reminder of my guest tonight, Caroline Lennon-Nally, representing Irish Homeowners Unite, David Hall, director of the Irish Mortgage Holders Organisation, Fine Gael TD for Dublin Central, Pascal Donoghue, and Brendan Burgess, founder of AskAboutMoney.com and a member of the previous government's expert group on mortgage arrears. So if you can't afford to pay your mortgage, if you're behind in your payments, is it finally possible to work out an agreement with your bank on the amount that you can afford to pay? Well, just after lunchtime today, the Finance Minister, Michael Noonan, and the Deputy Governor of the Central Bank, Matthew Elderfield, announced a plan which they say will force the banks into making deals with the 100,000 or so people who can't afford to pay. The banks have until the end of July to come up with a workable solution for 20% of borrowers in arrears. Almost a third will have to have been dealt with by the end of September, while 50% will have to have been resolved before the end of the year. Unless they do this, they could be forced to write down the value of the loan to the level which would apply if they had to repossess the property. What Matthew Elderfield calls sustainable solutions would be offered to people in difficulties.
The targets we're setting are designed to do just that, to end the impasse on mortgage arrears by progressively forcing the pace of action and by obliging the banks to ensure that the solutions they are offering and concluding with customers are truly sustainable and not just kicking the can down the road. This is going to require a big effort by the banks over the next 2 years to reassess their mortgage arrears cases to put sustainable solutions in place. These sustainable solutions may take different forms. In some cases, where the borrower is insolvent and is at the threshold of repossession, even after reducing their expenses right back, the central bank believes that some form of sustainable debt relief makes sense. But that's a call for each bank to make on a case-by-case basis or to be determined under the new insolvency framework. The targets should help bring that decision to a head, to speed up the pace of action and to help end the impasse on mortgage arrears. These targets are backed up by the threat of action to impose additional capital requirements on banks who fail to meet the targets or who have poor resolution strategies. We're also announcing today that we're minded to impose rigorous provisioning requirements on banks and credit unions for arrears cases. You'll see that voluntary surrender of the property or repossession is a possible outcome under the targets. This outcome is likely to be unavoidable where the borrower's ability or willingness to pay falls short of the recoverable value of the property. It's important to recognise that even for customers who cooperate with their bank and are therefore assessed for solutions as part of the mortgage arrears resolution process, it may not be possible to reach an agreement and the position may be too far gone. Various factors have temporarily restrained lenders, but it's an unpalatable fact in light of the severity of the crisis, that repossessions must be expected to rise significantly.
That is the Deputy Governor of the Central Bank, Matthew Elderfield. Well, the banks included in this agreement are AIB, Bank of Ireland, Permanent TSB, EBS, Ulster Bank, ACC Bank, KBC Bank of Ireland and ICS Building Society. Caroline Lennon-Nally, as I say, you've been in mortgage arrears for a long time now. Will what you heard today, will it make any difference to you? Will it help you?
Well, Valerie, based on what I heard today, I wouldn't be optimistic. I know that, the devil is in the details, so really it's going to take, it'll take me a day or two to review it. But from what I've seen so far, it just, I wouldn't be hopeful. I mean, when the Keane report came out, I think it was last October, 12 months, there was the same sort of hype that we've heard today. And for me, this mortgage plan just seems to coincide a little bit too much with the all the work that's been put into removing the legal loophole in relation to repossession. And I suppose I'm optimistic at heart, but a part of me feels, is this kind of a way of deflecting from that situation? Because there haven't been repossessions over the last 2 years simply because it wouldn't have been lawful. Mm-hmm. But now that that's going to be closed up, is it going to be a free-for-all? And what I have experienced from the banks to date, I'm a resilient individual and I'm in a position to actually deal with them in a very reasonable and realistic way, but it has been the most harrowing experience that I've ever gone through.
How much in arrears are you at this point?
The arrears aspect would be over 50,000 on my mortgage.
That's huge.
Yeah, it's huge.
And what has the attitude been of the banks that you've been dealing with?
The banks would be very happy for me to give them interest only. Mm-hmm. And I think they would leave it like that indefinitely until the actual prices may increase somewhat. For me, that's twice the price of renting. So it just, I've already invested 150,000 in this house. So to continue throwing good money after bad without somebody sitting down with me and making sense of it, there is no sense to it.
People will ask you, and I'm sure they have put the point to you, you have a job.
Absolutely.
So why can't you pay your mortgage?
But the situation is that I could give a very large chunk of the mortgage to the lender, but they're not willing to do a long-term sustainable deal with me. They want to deal with it over maybe, you know, look at it for 6 months. I'm in the latter part of my working career. So I'm running out of years in which I can pay this mortgage. I need to know that when it comes to retirement time, that I have some place to live. And if I'm not going to have that, I've already invested 150,000 into this house. The house might get maybe 170 at this point if I could manage to sell it. So why would I continue throwing good money after bad? All I want them to do is sit down with me, work out something that is long term and sustainable. They have not been willing to do that.
Brendan Burgess.
Caroline, you first went into arrears in December 2010, is that correct?
That's
roughly
correct.
How much have you paid towards your mortgage since December 2010?
I paid €1,000 a month for the first year, and then at the end of that, it was reverting back to interest only, which was almost 1,500. And I said to the buildings or to the lender at that stage, if they didn't sit down with me and work out something that was long term and sustainable, I was actually going to cease paying the mortgage. I have been putting the money aside every single month. It's there. I would only be too delighted. The stress of this is unreal. But if okay. they're going no. Excuse me, Brendan, let me finish. If they're going to actually take my house from me, I've already put 150,000 into a house that's likely to be repossessed. I'll then be made homeless. I'll be at the loss of the 150,000 and I will also have negative equity to the tune of about 180,000. I am not stupid. Why would I continue to throw good money after bad?
OK, we have about 20 or 30,000 people in severe mortgage difficulties. People who are unemployed, people who are on very, very low incomes. And I have great sympathy for them and I want to see deals done for those people. And I want to see them released from the pain and that they are under. And I'm prepared to pay more taxes for that because somebody has to pay for debt forgiveness. But Caroline is a senior public servant or a professional mm-hmm. public servant mm-hmm. as she describes herself. She bought at the top of the market. She traded up to buy at the top of the market.
She didn't actually trade up, incidentally.
Sorry, I understood that you traded
no,
up.
No, I didn't.
But you bought at the top of the market.
I bought at the top of the market, Brendan, based on the advice that I was given by a well-recognised bank. There was absolutely no code of practice applied to that. That application has been examined since by a senior banker who said to me, it's actually, they cannot understand how that loan was given to me.
Brendan, so what do you think should happen to, in Caroline's
situation? Caroline has not paid anything on her mortgages, as I understood it.
I have money to give to my lender if they will work out a long-term sustainable deal.
Sorry, Caroline is not prepared to pay a lender. She falls into the classic category of people who can afford to pay their mortgage, but they're in serious negative equity. They don't want to pay their mortgage. And I'm terribly worried that this legislation and the other legislation will have me and the other people listening to this programme subsidising people who are just strategic defaulters on their loan. I mean, how many people out there?
But Brendan,
how many
people
out there listening to this would like to be a professional public servant on a high salary? And saying I can't pay the interest or I won't pay the interest on my mortgage. Look, I have sympathy for you or for anybody else who bought at the top of the market. I genuinely have sympathy, but I have no sympathy whatsoever for anybody who is making no payments at all. And I really think that the sooner the government brings in the legislation to repossess the property, there should be no barriers to them to repossess your property.
So you think Caroline's house should be repossessed?
Absolutely. It should be repossessed and they should come after her for all her assets. And in fact, I'd go much further. I'd say there should be a facility whereby they could attach her earnings. She has the full capacity to pay her mortgage. She doesn't want to because she's in negative
equity. Okay, Caroline, respond to that.
Okay, first and foremost, I have unrelentedly been in contact with my lender from the actually before I got into difficulty. My point is that the lender doesn't want to work out a long-term deal with me. So say, for example, I agree to give them another 60,000 over the next 5 years. I then have 5 years less working life left, OK? I've given them an extra 60,000, which will be 210,000 in total off the property. They will still repossess it, Valerie. Because basically what I owe is not sustainable over the length of time that I'll have working. So all I'm asking them to do is sit down, negotiate with me so that I can work out something that is affordable for me and that will be paying off the interest plus the capital. Interest only is glorified renting with none of the perks.
What is wrong with renting? Why are we saying glorified? Why are you demeaning renting? You have chosen to buy a house.
Because rental would be half the cost of what the actual interest only would be on the mortgage,
Brendan. This is a decision that you made to buy a house. You made that decision. If house prices
had risen... I made the decision, Brendan, based on my earnings at that point in time. However...
How much have your earnings come down by over since...
My earnings have come down by over 25% since then.
How much have they come down in real terms?
25%.
How much is that per month?
That is 25% of my salary.
Okay.
So that was what I based my decision on to take out my mortgage. And since, leave the negative equity aspect out of it, because if somebody doesn't necessarily want to sell, whether we're in negative equity or not is not an issue. However, if your salary decreases, if I was to go and look for a mortgage now, never in a million years would I consider taking out a mortgage for the amount of money that I've taken it out for, because I would know that what I'm earning does not match what's going out. I'm an intelligent woman. But basically, at the time that I took out my mortgage, my salary was a certain amount. I'm very lucky. I'm still working. But so many of the people who engage with Irish Homeowners Unite, they've lost their jobs, or one person has lost their job.
And they're the people I'm sympathetic towards. Mm-hmm. And I would like to see legislation. I'd like to see the banks facilitating and dealing with
Brendan,
those people.
They're not engaging. The banks are not engaging.
Sorry,
so it's absolutely
the bank offered
impossible.
You interest only. And that is an excellent deal to get interest only. But you weren't happy with interest only.
No, because interest only, Brendan, was astronomical. It was actually double what you could rent the house for.
But this is the cost of the
decision
you
made. I have no problem in renting. Free me up and allow me to go and rent.
You have a mortgage of 300...
But stop trying to extort that amount of money when I'm not renting.
You have a mortgage of 350,000, you told us, on the front line. if that's that right, 350,000.
It was 320,000 on the front line.
The interest rate is about 4.5%.
Unfortunately, I was quite prudent. At the time, I went for a fixed rate mortgage.
But it was fixed now at
over 5%. Mm-hmm.
What's your interest rate now?
It's a lot lower now, Brendan.
What is your interest rate now?
My interest at this stage would be 1.9%.
So 2% of 350,000 is about 7,000 a year. So you are getting to occupy your house for 7,000 a year.
But I could not rent my house for interest only now because I'm due to pay capital also, not just interest.
I've gone beyond that point. You have an interest only mortgage. The bank are prepared to say to you, we'll take interest only, 7,000 a year.
No, I don't have an interest. Where did you get that from?
I said I did for the first five years of my mortgage.
Yes. Okay, I have two other guests here who I want to bring in at this
point.
David Hall. David, you work with a lot of people who are in mortgage difficulties, who can't pay their loans. What was announced today, is that what they've been waiting to hear?
I think, Audrey, it's worthwhile going back to the facts. And the facts, as per the Central Bank's report of the last quarter, 2012, despite incorrect reports today, multiple occasions in relation to the number of people in arrears, the actual number of people in arrears at the end of December 2012 are 143,851 households, not 94,000. Surprisingly, the Department of Finance can't do basic, simple maths. So when we start from that figure, one of the categories that Brendan did mention is those in arrears above 720 days, which is 2 years. There's 23,500. And over 1 year to 2 years, 27,000. Combined is 55,000 households. So the crisis is a crisis. The pain and difficulty people are faced with for all the various economic circumstances we're all very familiar with is clearly evident. Those people who are dealing with the stress and the difficulty on the front line, be they customers, borrowers, family, friends, or organisations such as ours, multiple other organisations and individuals, know the truth. And the truth is that banks have been simply stringing things along for the last number of years. And the analogy has been used as they've been kicking the can down the street. Well, today, Audrey, that can was stood on and crushed. Because the power given to the bank in today's plan, and today's plan, by the way, Brendan makes reference to legislation, has no legislative basis at all. This is another code, a cosy deal between bankers, government and the central bank. And we have a regulator who has wearing two hats in the form of consumer protection, which is non-existent, and that of a regulator. Number of words, when we heard Matthew Elderfield speak earlier on, may, believes, take effect of, backed up by, minded to impose, all waffle. The reality is they've had 5 years to impose sanctions upon banks and have failed to do so. Of the banks mentioned today, there are 25% of those with mortgage difficulty who have mortgages with organisations not covered by today's agreement, shall we call it. And they're very vulnerable people whom were loaned by agents and by subprime lenders and also local authorities who have got no recourse to any potential benefit that might arise from this. And it is important to understand, and some simple questions arise from this, who supervises these solutions? These are sustainable solutions. The bank and the bank only determines the sustainable solutions. And Matthew Elderfield made a very, very inappropriate comment today where he made reference to, as a last resort, family homes being repossessed. He has no authority to adjudicate when a last resort is. I wish he did. The bank and only the bank determine what's a last resort. So, today was a crushing blow, I believe, to people in difficulty. The single most important issue from today has been the intended removal of the restrictions that existed from lenders to contact people in arrears. And that now puts a new time frame of 30 days whereby which they can now accelerate the process for repossession in the absence of any independent appeal, any independent arbitration or any independent supervision supervised by, an incestuous central bank, which is wholly, wholly unacceptable at this stage.
Pascal Donoghue Finnegan, what do you say to that? The agreement has been completely dismissed there by David Hall and the people he works with.
Two points in relation to the show today. Firstly, I find the idea that you could describe Matthew Elderfield as participation in any incestuous relationship with anybody as being, frankly, preposterous, actually. This is the man that's made very tough decisions in relation to the Quinn Insurance Group, who's made very tough decisions in relation to Bloxham Capital,
I thought the show was a moment in arrears,
in relation to other parts of his job. And the idea that the allegation that you've levied against him, that he's part of an intimate relationship with other banks, is starkly contrasted by his firm action in relation to dealing with an array of difficulties during his tenure as the financial regulator. The early part of the show did show the difficulty in relation to dealing with this issue. It really did. I mean, it was brought to life very vividly by the discussion that we had there, in that the crisis, and this is the only point in which I agree with David on, this is a crisis of nearly unbearable emotional stress for many people, second only, but frequently related to losing your job. But the complexity of dealing with all of this is just massive, because society will be dealing with a cost in relation to this. But many different people have a definition of what that cost will be.
But this plan, Pascal, by the government today, this is their your big plan for dealing
Absolutely.
With it. And according to David Hall and others who I've heard earlier in the day, they don't believe it's going to work because it's not, you know, strict enough on the banks, and it gives the banks too much power.
And I would point to three areas in which this is very, very different to what we have had before, make this very different from what has happened before. Firstly, the idea that there are targets laid down for the number of proposals that must be issued, the time frame by which those proposals must be agreed. Secondly, there are sanctions in place. And thirdly, there's a clear role in relation to the financial regulator regarding ensuring those targets are met.
But what are the sanctions?
Well, this comes into the requesting and requiring banks to hold more capital to offset a reduction in the value of the property.
But that's a could. It's very clear, I think they could be asked to put aside capital.
I have no doubt whatsoever.
Should they not be doing that anyway?
David, let me finish, please. I have no doubt whatsoever if those criteria are not met, that will happen. But can I say this, though, that I think anybody who is listening to the show, and I completely understand where Caroline's coming from at this point, anybody who's faced a nightmare to date of having to get their way through this kind of difficulty, I think will understandably be thinking, is this going to make a difference to me? And the only proof that it will make a difference to people is if they get a call from the banks, or more importantly, when they go to engage the banks, they do not face the kind of difficulty that Caroline has clearly faced in dealing with them. And this is why we have a sanction in place, and this is why there's targets in place. So in relation to targets, sanctions and an enhanced role for the financial regulator, I would argue there's a very different architecture, or will be soon in place to where we have been before, to deal with the awful difficulty that I know this is causing people.
Are you convinced, David Hall?
No, and make no mistake about it, I, like most people, would like nothing more than to have been convinced. And being honest, was bitterly disappointed in relation to what happened today. Bitterly disappointed. And I think it, you know, disingenuous for Pascal to say, you know, the regulator has conducted himself in other areas. I've absolutely no question he's conducted himself in other areas. We're here to discuss mortgage arrears. The facts, his facts, the regulator's facts for the central bank, are an embarrassment and a shameful indictment of a lack of action for the last 4 years. And the spiralling effect on that, on households and families throughout the country. So today we're given a plan which, you know, in no consultation with any organisations involved in this, a code of conduct in relation to mortgage arrears, a four-week consultation period of which predetermined the outcome of the consultation period. Matthew Elfield said today the imposition of contacting borrowers for 3 times a month would be removed.
Yep.
This is how you deal with mortgage holders. So this is a relationship. This is an agreement between bankers, regulators and government, because nobody else was at that table, let's be clear.
But this is an agreement that's been put in place to deal with the crisis of the over 100,000 people that are grappling with this. That's what this has been put in place for. I have no doubt whatsoever that dealing with all of this, which we will do during the year, not only is massively important to the people who are dealing with this trauma, but it's crucial to our entire country. And David accused me of being disingenuous a moment ago, which he's entitled to do. But on the other hand, I wasn't the person here who was suggesting there was an intimate relationship going on between the financial regulator and the banks that led to this. Let's be very clear, and I want to reiterate this again. If the banks do not deliver the targets for the number of proposals that are put out there, their capital reserves will be increased. The Taoiseach today in the Dáil made very, very clear that if the banks do not respond to this, the central bank will look at other issues regarding how this bill would be responded to. It is wholly unacceptable, the lack of progress that has been made to date. It is wholly unacceptable that until recently we had antiquated, ridiculous, personal insolvency legislation that took people from a trauma into purgatory.
Okay.
And that's what we've changed Brenda also Burgess. In relation to that.
Increasing the capital reserves is a good thing. And as David pointed out, it should be done anyway. Mm. I don't think proper provisioning for banks should be a stick. It shouldn't be a penalty. AIB and PTSB won't be terribly concerned about being required to increase their capital provisions because the capital is coming from the government anyway. Mm-hmm. So this doesn't really affect them that much. But the people that I am most concerned about is that the four lenders in this country which have the highest rates of arrears are not covered by this. And I just can't understand that. Start Mortgages is a subprime lender. They are subject to the code, the mortgage arrears code, but they're not subject to this. So they're not affected by this, but they will be getting the, they will benefit from the change in the legislation to allow repossessions.
And the 30-day rule.
Bank of Scotland is not affected by this mm-hmm. because they're no longer supervised. And they also were the biggest lender during the peak of the property bubble. Mm-hmm. So they will benefit from the various different things. But then there are two other institutions which are under direct government control. The first is the IBRC, which is the former Irish Nationwide. They have 8,000 borrowers. Half their borrowers are in mortgage arrears. And there's nothing today, and since the liquidation of IBRC, nothing at all has been announced to in any way facilitate the Irish Nationwide borrowers. Mm-hmm. And last, and by definitely not least, is the local authorities. The largest, the most subprime and the most outrageous of all the lenders were the government itself through the local authorities, where they lent lower paid people 10 times their salary. As a result, we now have at least 50% mortgage arrears on those. And nothing has been announced, as far as I know now, sure. Nothing at all has been announced about those.
OK, Carolyn. Audrey, just as I'm listening, I suppose, I'm quite taken aback at the level of detachment that we're talking about this issue. From my experience of engaging with homeowners who are in difficulty, it impacts on absolutely every area of their life. So I don't know, is there any, the whole socioeconomic picture, is that being taken into consideration here at all? Like when the number crunching is going on and the fact that people's lives are disintegrating in front of them and like, you know, coming back at Brendan with some of the arguments he made a couple of minutes ago, when I think about the lengths I have gone to over the last 2 years between contacting Minister Noonan, Joan Burton. I've even contacted Archbishop Dermot Martin to see was there any way that perhaps he could facilitate talks. Because my point has been, as homeowners we're very obviously part of a huge problem. Why won't they work with us and help us to become part of the solution?
Do you want debt forgiveness? Do you want your debt written off?
No, I most certainly do not. But I want a level of realism brought into the picture because like what Brendan said, I bought my property at the very peak of the market. But bearing in mind, I didn't know that at the time. And it was based on the salary that I was earning at that time. And around the very week that I signed for my mortgage, we had our Taoiseach at that time tell the nation that those who were talking the economy down should go in and commit suicide. So that was the landscape under which I purchased my property. I'm an intelligent woman. I had sold a house. I had a few bob from that. I would have been delighted to put that few bob into a bank and leave it there and rent because with my age, I knew that I was running out of years in which to pay a mortgage. So I kind of thought if I don't buy now and this, as Brendan said, it was rising and rising, you know, maybe I'll never get to buy a house again. And I've never lived in, you know, I've never gone to the state to look for housing. I've always tried to be independent okay. and row my own boat.
Sorry, did you say you sold a house? Did you say you had sold a house?
Yes, I did.
I thought you said you hadn't traded up.
I didn't trade up.
Right.
But why did somebody have to trade up because they sell a house, Brenda?
But you had.
But I most certainly didn't trade up.
You were already in the property market. And you'd benefit from the growth.
Brendan, I've had a mortgage since I was 18 years of age. I'm working since I was 13. So, yes, I had a mortgage.
But you've benefited from the growth in the property market.
No, I didn't benefit from the... because I actually separated. So I didn't trade up. And you shouldn't really make assumptions. That's what you're doing. And that's okay. What's happening to all of the people, the 2,500 people that are on Irish Homeowners Unite. You don't know their situations. And it's so wrong to sit in judgment the way you do.
Well, okay. David, on the other hand, though, I mean, in fairness, we are, I mean, people are offering their situation. You gave your story.
Yeah.
And then people... It's only understandable that people do make assumptions about it and ask questions about it if it's based on a personal story. But all that being said, though...
But Pascal, that's why people don't come forward, because when you do, you're lacerated. That's why people don't speak up.
In fairness, I don't think anybody's trying to lacerate you here. I think people are trying to have a discussion about a very nuanced and hugely important matter. I don't think there's any detachment in relation to this. I mean, I have dealt with people who have had their homes repossessed already. I deal every day with people who are in massive arrears, and I see the huge emotional damage that this has been done to them. But two points I would make in relation to this, though, is that the plan that we put in place does have to focus on people's ability to pay. It really does. It's so important that we deal with people who have the ability to sustain a mortgage based on the current market valuation of their property. And that's the space that we have to go in. And in relation to the point that Brendan made there, which is a very, very good point regarding people who aren't covered by this, 90% of mortgage owners will be covered by this plan or could be covered by this plan during the year. But there are 10% who will not be.
No, I
checked this evening.
Yeah, Department of Finance, I'm sure. Yeah.
Well, mortgage owners, but not mortgage arrears.
Oh, excuse me. I did check it this evening, but in relation to the banks that you're talking about that are not being covered by it, and I think it's a particular point there in relation to the former Irish Nationwide mortgage owners. The question we have to settle is, where will those mortgages end up? You know, who's going to end up owning them after what's taking place in relation to IBRC?
Do a deal with them now. You're telling the banks here to go and do deals. So you own a bank that has 8,000 borrowers in arrears. Go and stop telling the banks what to do. I think, unfortunately,
it'd be more accurate to say we're dealing with a bank that's been put into liquidation. That's what's happened there.
Okay, David.
And we do have to deal with it. And just in relation to local authorities, because I'm familiar with this as well, I have dealt with this myself in relation to my own local authority. And I know they're doing their very best to ensure people come up with solutions that work for them. I do want to say that.
Okay, David Hall.
I'm just celebrating myself and Brendan agreeing on a few points. First of all, I'm savouring that moment. But you know, but the point Brendan makes is very, very important, and I alluded to it in relation to 25% of those who are in arrears are not covered by this magic programme and magic plan. This was a limited plan, and it's very important. And myself and others who commentate on various aspects of solutions that are in the marketplace mention a number of products emanating from the Keane report. It's very, very important. Of those existing banks that are covered in this plan, half them don't provide any of the Keane report solutions. So mortgage to rent is not provided by four of those lenders currently out of the six. That's one solution, boom, gone. And today, you know, Minister Noonan alluded to the Keane report and the solutions emanating from it. There were four. The fourth is the insolvency bill, which is a monster in its own mind. The second one is a split mortgage. Only two of the six currently offer a split mortgage. So, you know, there is an element of detachment when it comes to the actual solutions being done. You're compelling a bank. So I give you an answer. If I'm the bank, my answer straight away is I pull out the arrears figures from the last quarter. I say, we've restructured 80,000. Knock yourselves out, lads. We're covered for the rest of the year. Game over. Ball burst. Complete rubbish.
Well, firstly, I've never suggested this is a magic plan. Nor would I ever do that. There are many people who are in terrible difficulty, and we have to come up with a comprehensive plan to fix this.
In relation to
the point there that you've made in relation to the personal insolvency legislation, I really fail to see how an idea that's coming in that will allow people to reach structured agreements in relation to their debt, the standard of living in return for a debt write down can be described as a monster.
But debt write down,
we had the most antiquated personal insolvency legislation across all of Europe. We had bankruptcy periods that went on in excess of 10 years. That has all been changed. And where I do agree with David on, and you celebrated a moment of agreement between yourself and Brendan, let us rejoice because another period of spontaneous agreement has broken out. I actually think he's right. I take his point in relation to the number of more mortgage to rent packages that have been rolled out, which can work for many people, is extremely disappointing. I've come across a case where it made a very big difference to somebody. The number of split mortgages, I'm very disappointed. Well, last week in a now infamous Public Accounts Committee meeting, I tried to find out how many split mortgages had been rolled out. And there's difficulty in getting that figure. And that's why we need this enhanced role for the financial regulator that this plan is going to be delivering. I'm not suggesting it's a magical plan. Nobody could do that. What I am arguing, though, is with targets, sanctions and an enhanced role for the financial regulator, it will make a big difference versus where we have been before.
People today welcomed the prospect of a debt write-down. Every single bank within this state, any lender of all the 16 regulated entities under the auspices of the central bank, have within their grasp to negotiate, as any adult can do so, any legally binding contract and have had the power to do for the last number of years. They don't require a colourful document for the central bank to tell them what they should do. The statistics, the facts and the figures that have been mentioned tonight and what Pascal's alluded to speak volumes for the intention of lending institutions for the last 5 years. And I don't believe for one minute that one banker or one CEO of any of those banks, those six banks and the other ones who are sitting at home breaking their backsides laughing tonight, are going to lose one wink sleep in relation to this or the threat of any threat from Matthew Elderfield or anybody else within the central bank, because the history tells me something completely different and the facts here speak much louder than any fiction and any spin that can be given by anybody. And I do object strenuously to Minister Noonan or Elderfield or anybody else coming out today giving a very general view to very vulnerable people, very afraid people, very concerned people around the country, thinking that a magic wand has been produced today. The power, the control still is less vested in one entity and one entity only, and they are still the banks.
And I want to make clear again that nobody is saying a magic wand or plan has been developed here. I mean, they're David's words. They're not the words of Minister Noonan. They're certainly not my words here this evening, talking about magical plans or waving a wand at anybody here. But the very vulnerable people that David is talking about, who he has done great work on behalf, they're the very people that need better support of the state than they've got
today. And you're removing the loophole. You give me 30 days limit, you've got to throw them down the
street. And that's why we're putting in place. Well, let me respond to that point, actually, because it's another extraordinary allegation you've just made here tonight. But before I do that, I'll just emphasise again targets and an enhanced role for the financial regulator, which is coming in. This idea that the government has thrown anybody out in the street in the way you've just said, that's just ridiculous. This is the government that's just brought in a personal insolvency bill that has been passed by the Dáil, that will be operational within this summer, that contains within legislation the ability of people to keep their homes if they reach agreement with their banks.
If
that's in the bill, David, and you know it is.
I know this idea
that you're suggesting here, that the government are going around, are looking to throw people out in the streets and make them homeless. That's an extraordinary statement for
you to make,
given that we have just brought forward a bill to avoid that and a plan
to try
and help people.
You've brought forward a bill that requires a veto and gives a veto to a bank. That's number one. Number two, you're reversing Justice Dunn's decision without any history. Logic would dictate, if you're so confident about your plan, you've waited for 2 years to reverse Justice Dunn's decision, why don't you sit back and allow these banks under the stewardship of the central bank and these six banks contest and see what their targets they meet, then give them the power to reverse. You've no oversight here, no independence at all. You're throwing people to the wolves, and this is wholly it is absolutely incredible to say for 1 minute by reversing Justice Dunn's decision and allowing a 30-day intervention period, no advice, no financial advice, no legal advice, to the full might and power of a bank you want to subject distressed mortgage holders in the absence of any secure, proper, reasonable advice.
There is still going to be a code of conduct with the banks. David would have us think that some
code
of conduct...
But there has been a code of conduct and it hasn't made any difference, Pascal.
But Caroline, David would have us think that the code of conduct that has been there... I've had experience of people where it's made a difference. I'm genuinely sorry that hasn't been the case. David would think that this code of conduct has been thrown out of the window. Of course, that's completely wrong. What the government has said is they're going to put out a consultation period of 30 days to look how it could be changed. He said we've changed already the decision that's been made by Justice Dunn. Of course, that hasn't happened either.
But it's going to happen.
We have said that we're going to look at it. But the flip side of all of this is... I hope the number of repossessions that take place in our state is going to be as low as possible.
Okay, Brendan.
But are we also saying that everybody should stay in their home?
I'd like to talk about the repossessions issue. The reality of the situation is that there are a lot of people in Ireland who have unsustainable mortgages. People who, if they could, would like to pay their mortgages, but they can't. And we have to face up to that situation. And we do need to say to these people, if you cannot afford your mortgage on the current value of your home, then the right thing to do in these cases is to surrender your home, to sell it in an orderly manner.
So when you say the current value of your home...
Can I come back to that for a second? Can I come back? So there are people who are unemployed who cannot pay their mortgage, and they must be allowed to sell their home, and the shortfall must be written off. But that's for people who have engaged in the mortgage arrears resolution process for the last 3 years. I don't want to be going into the personal insolvency arrangement for 6 years or debt settlement for 3 years or 5 years. If they've already been 3 years and engaging properly and paying what they can, then they should be allowed to surrender their home and have the shortfall written off. There's another group of people who have deliberately, strategically defaulted on their mortgage. And they should be told, we now have the power to repossess you. And if you don't start paying your mortgage, we're going to go and repossess your home. And the legislation should be changed to facilitate that so they can't drag it out for years and years and years. So I would hope that, and I would expect that in any properly functioning system, that the level of repossessions or voluntary sales will rise. We repossessed on average over the last few years, long before the Dunn judgment, we were repossessing 300 or 400 houses a year. It should be far higher than that in any ordinary circumstances, never mind the huge levels of arrears that we have at the moment. So just to be quite clear, people who can afford to pay their mortgage must pay their mortgage in full. People who, irrespective of whether they're in negative equity or not, Caroline, I'm not suggesting that people who are in negative equity...
I just said earlier, Brendan, that negative equity is not a reason for somebody not to be paying their mortgage.
Well, I don't understand why you're not paying your mortgage then, but I just wanted to stress that
because
point about the repossessions.
Because it's based on people's salaries being reduced, both by levies, by tax, universal service charges, pension levies, pay decreases, like... The salaries are different now than they were 5 years ago, and that's
just a
fact.
We've just figured out is 6,500 a year, and you have paid nothing for the last 18 months, I think you said, to your mortgage lender. I think, whatever way you say it, I think most people listening to that would be hoping that the government brings in the repossession legislation
as soon as possible. No, what I have been doing, Brendan, is I am actually looking after myself, because having gone to seek professional advice by going to a lender that wasn't up a back street but who was a recognised lender, and having had a senior banker look at my mortgage application, they were able to tell me that even based on the figures that I provided the lender with 5 years ago, they actually gave me 50 grand more than they should have done. That was based on my full salary at that point. So what my point here is, where is the accountability in relation to the recklessness of the banks that went on?
The recklessness of the borrowers.
Absolutely,
yes,
Brendan.
You know,
but we're constantly focusing on the borrowers.
You've just said you're a very intelligent woman.
I'm a very
intelligent
woman,
you seem to
yes.
me, you're a professional public servant. You seem a very intelligent woman.
Yeah, and I'm
woman.
Not a stupid woman, you see. That's the difference, Brendan.
Yeah, but you knew what you were doing when you were borrowing.
I don't think there's any allegations of stupidity of anything flying around here. And in my own experience and my hope is that anybody who can make a contribution to their mortgage does. I really do, because nobody...
And if their lenders engaged with them adequately, they would do past
Excuse me, them. Sorry, I'm not making a comment in relation to you. Mm. I'm just making a general point here that the vast majority of people who, if they can make a contribution to their mortgage, they do want to do that, and that does happen. And I want to emphasise again, David talked about people being thrown to the wolves, people being evicted from their homes. This government and I have absolutely no intention of putting in place a plan that forces people out of their homes and makes things very difficult. But a point that we do have to face up to here is, in the absence of some kind of credible plan regarding home ownership, how do we deal with people who can pay their mortgage but decide not to?
Okay.
And that again, respectively, would be a handful of people based on the numbers that are involved here. But there's a number of other points.
Well, there's American research, David, that you'll be familiar with. No, David, you'll be familiar with this. I know you heard it one night. There is American research that says up to 35% of Americans were engaged with strategic default.
Yeah, last time I looked, we're in Dublin.
We are in Dublin. Now, I'm convinced the number is far lower.
Some of you are on the moon.
No, I'm convinced the number is a fraction of that. But we do have a responsibility to respond to that.
What have you done for welfare fraud or insurance fraud? That's just a fact of life. There are people who pull strokes all the time.
Welfare fraud.
Get on and deal with them.
Welfare fraud, Minister
Don't
Burton
punish
announced
95%
a saving.
Of people. Get on with it.
In relation to welfare fraud, Minister Burton announced savings of €750 million that were found.
And that happened. I've spoken to her and said, brilliant. But get on with it. But don't hold up the entire recovery
of the
country.
We've just done it.
Yeah, and do
we've
more
just done
of
it.
It.
But we dealt with the issue of welfare fraud. And we're dealing with it, and we need to do more.
Okay. Absolutely, the cost of the state. So when Mary and Joe get evicted from their home and are placed in, as Brendan says correctly, can't afford physically to pay it, they therefore qualify for social housing. There's any payment made from 650, depending on the local authority, up to 950 or 1100, say in South Wicklow, whatever it is, for where you're allowed to be paid. Why wouldn't there be an intelligent plan in relation to looking at the administration, the cost, the social cost and the family cost involved in that, to have some joined up thinking, especially when there's state-owned banks involved, to say, why are we letting Mary and Joe go? We've agreed they can't stay anymore. Why doesn't the local authority pay the bank and maybe take over ownership of the property and have a mortgage? Actually, and one of the proposals Keane made, which people, including myself, didn't think was a good idea at the time, I actually have changed my mind. I actually think it's a great idea. And it is where the payment is made from the local authority to the bank and the person becomes a tenant and stays there. And at the end of all of the payments that are being made for the multiple thousands of people at the moment, they end up owning the home. The council owns the home. The other point to remember here is there's not just the bank and the mortgage, there are other creditors. The revenue cleverly have put themselves in a preferred creditor status from the property tax. We have other creditors, including the credit union and others. The credit union are going to have some crack trying to get money out of people now. And other creditors as well. So this is far from over.
Audrey, I would just ask, I suppose, in relation to my own situation and also the 2,500 people on Irish Homeowners Unite, if the banks and the government would talk to us rather than about us, it would be much more helpful. I don't know. I haven't come across anybody who links in with my group who isn't willing to do their bit or take responsibility. But we need to be communicated with, and communication is a two-way process.
Yeah. But I do think there'll be a lot of people, though, I have to say, Caroline, who could be listening to this, who'll be wondering why you don't take the mortgage, the interest payment route. I mean you compared it a moment ago.
So just to continue paying interest only.
But, I mean, you
but then, Pascal, what I would like to do is I'd like to be afforded the courtesy to go away and rent. Because if I was renting, my landlord would look after all my maintenance issues. I wouldn't be left in a situation where I'm renting, basically, if I'm just paying interest only.
Plus, I've got renting?
There's nothing wrong with renting, provided that's what it is and that the homeowner isn't left with all of the maintenance issues. You've got extra insurance. And at the end of the day, you can be told within, you know, a week to leave there. There's nothing wrong with renting. I'm all for it. Free us up and let us rent if that's what you want. But do not ask us to continue to pay interest only and have us believe that we are purchasing our own home, because we're not.
Well, no, just to make the general point, though, from, again, dealing with constituents who've dealt with a mortgage, who have taken the mortgage interest route, the reason they've taken that route is because it does give them the possibility at a point in the future of still owning their homes.
Not for three years.
You're talking about your personal experience, which of course
and
you're entitled to.
And 2,500 people on Irish homeowners.
I'm talking about the personal experience of people that I've dealt with to date on this particular point. But where Caroline is, of course, completely correct, is in the absence of engagement from banks, you go nowhere.
And that's what we're looking to change.
The actual level of engagement by the banks is actually quite high.
No, it isn't, Brendan. That's absolute nonsense.
Long before the Code of Conduct and Mortgage Arrears came out, people were ringing the banks. They were doing deals with the
banks. Brendan, that's deluded.
And the banks were responding to people, because the banks don't want to repossess homes. The banks do want to pay their mortgage. They don't want to write off debt. But most people who go in and who are reasonable. But if somebody goes to the bank and says, this is the deal I want,
I don't want to be paying this for the next 20 years because I'm in a lot of negative equity. And by the way, unless you agree, I'm going to put this money into an account somewhere else and not pay you.
God forbid that a homeowner might actually have an opinion on rights.
Or be allowed engaged.
Or be allowed engaged.
You're not engaging. You have paid nothing, you said.
That's an antiquated way of thinking, Brendan. You need to move into the year 2013.
Sorry, you are required to engage with your loans, and I don't think you're going to even be able to benefit from the Personal Insolvency Act.
I don't want it, Brendan. Thank you very much indeed for a lively discussion tonight. Caroline Lennon-Nally, David Hall, Pascal Donoghue and Brendan Burgess. The front page of tomorrow's Irish Examiner, A New World Pope, a picture of Pope Francis, marks the series of firsts for the Church. So front page story there, and no doubt on all the papers tomorrow morning. That's it from us here on The Late Debate. Until tomorrow night at 10. Good night.
The Late Debate, presented by Audrey Carvel, was produced by Peter Woods. The broadcast coordinator was Jarlath Holland. Researcher is Richie Byrne. And sound supervision tonight was by Richie McCulloch.